Good morning. We are in Shkalim Daf Yud Aleph. We are starting on Yud Amud Beis. We're going to be starting with another comment made by Rav Yehuda Gad Gadot. The Gemara quoted Rav Yehuda Gad Gadot yesterday in the context of yesterday's Mishnah. The Mishnah on the Amud Beis. And Yud Amud Beis goes through an assortment of allocations, money that's collected for the operations of the Beis HaMikdash. So where would, how would the money get allocated? So as we learned yesterday, when all the money is put into the Lishka, so you have what's called the Trumas Lishka, that's the three withdrawals that are done annually. Then on top of that, you also have the Shayari Lishka, any money's left over after the withdrawal. And then you also have leftovers. You have leftovers of the Trumas Lishka. And so what is done with all of these various monies? So the Mishnah on Yud Amud Beis, yesterday's daf, gave us a listing of exactly how these funds are to be allocated. The basic idea, which we learned very clearly in yesterday's Mishnah, in yesterday's Daf, and this really started off our fourth parak, is that with the Trumas Lishka, so that's used for carbon seaboard. That's the basic idea. And then an assortment of an opinions of what we do with the Shayari Lishka and the Shayari Trumas Lishka. But basically with the Trumas Lishka itself, that's used for to purchase carbon seaboard. Good. So that was the basic idea. The Gemara yesterday, towards the bottom of the Amud Beis, quotes Rabbi Chizkiah, quoting a Braisa, quoting Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot. So Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot basically broke it down into three categories. One is that the Kataris and all Karbanos and Seabor are being purchased from Trumas Lishka. Two is that the Mizbech HaZahav and all Kli Sharis are coming from the Mosin Asachim, which we're going to be discussing in more detail later today. And three, the Mizbech HaOla, the Hechel, the Azaros, so that's coming from a separate fund altogether called the Bedek HaBayis. That was the that was the groupings, the organization of allocation, according to Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot. And then also the actual courtiers herself are coming from the Shayar HaLishka. You can put that down as a fourth category. Anyway, that's all the allocations. And mind you, in yesterday's Mishnah, so there were no less than four different opinions in terms of how the money's to be spent. So, needless to say, it's certainly complexity within the Mishnah and within the Gemara, exactly how all these funds are to be allocated. As long as we quoted Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot, so the Gemara now is going to be quoting a second Memor, and that's where we're going to be starting this morning. On Yud Amud Beis, we're starting now with Amar Rabbi Chizkiah. It's about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So the Gemara picking it up right where we left off yesterday. Amar Rabbi Chizkiah, Tana Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot. So the Gemara quotes this Tana once again on a separate but related issue. And that is as follows. In order to do the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, you need a Beis HaMikdash. That's a pretty clear point, right? There is a discussion we saw in Megillah, also Daf Yud, as in many other places in Shas as well, as to whether or not the Kedusha of the area of the Beis HaMikdash continues even after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Kedusha Rishon Kishla Shaita V'Kishla Asad Lavo. That is a major debate amongst the Tanaim. So, but in order to do the avoda, so how much of the Beis HaMikdash do we actually need? So the Gemara quotes B'Shem Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadot the following. It's a brisa, and that is Hashochem Va'Menor Va'Mizbechos Va'Paroches Ma'ak V'Nasa Karbanos. That in order to bring a carb, Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Lefishitas Rabbi Meir, in order to bring Karbanos, so you need not only the actual physical edifice of the Beis HaMikdash, but you need the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash as well, the basic kalim of the Beis HaMikdash. You need a shochan, a menorah, mizbechos, meaning presumably two mizbechs, one that is interior, what we describe as the mizbech azav, and one that's exterior. They're right, the mizbech chitzona, the mizbech of the azara, and in the Mishkan it's called the mizbech nechoshes. Okay, but basically the inner and the outer mizbech, and also the paroches. All the curtains that are separating one area from another area, meaning aside from the parochas that exist in the actual kodesh as well, in the heichal separating the kodesh and the kodesh hakodashim, which we described in great detail when we went through the masechtos of Tamin and Midos, but presumably parochas over here just simply means partitions. In other words, you need everything to be separated with some form of partition. So according to Rabbi Meir, so the Beis HaMikdash has to be totally in place, and you need the kalim of the most basic of the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, menorah, shulchan, and both mizbechs to be active and functioning in order to offer a karban. The chachamim and the chachamim said no. Obviously, according to the chachamim, there is a mitzvah of the Torah to construct a shulchan and a menorah and both mizbechs, inner and outer. But according to the chachamim, what is the basic prerequisites necessary in order to bring a karban. So according to the Chachamim, now in our Girsa, we have the words, we have the words v'hakein, right? Hakior v'hakein. So the Gaon over here takes that out. The Gaon says that's not what it's talking about, the kior. So that's the, that's basically the big sink that they have. It's not exactly a sink, but some sort of basin that they had in order to wash their hands. That's the girsa that we have, but the Gaon says that's not the correct girsa. The correct girsa should be karkar v'keren. You basically need the mizbeach, right? The karkar is some sort of mesh that's wrapped around the mizbeach. The keren over here is referring to the krenos, the horns of the mizbeach, right? The four boxes, the four squares that are placed on the top of the mizbeach. Basically, you need a mizbeach. That is the most basic thing that you need in order to bring the karbanos. And that's the only thing you need, according to the shita of the Chachamim. So, in this brisa, we have now two shitas, that of Rameir and that according to the Chachamim, in terms of what is the most basic requirements necessary in order to bring a karban. The Gemara says, now, I'll compare this with statements that were made by Amoraim. The Gemara quotes these Amoraim who both say, kol, hein, dechsiv, nochach ma'akev. If you see the word nochach in the Torah, so it's going to be ma'akev. So the Tikkun Chadaton over here says that the word nochach over here is a description of the menorah. The pasuk says visamta, right? Not quoting the pasuk verbatim, but hamenorah nochach hashochan. So you see the word menorah is the word nochach over there, which literally means opposite, next to. So that tells us that it's ma'akev. So right now we have the menorah being ma'akev. However, tzela ain't a ma'akev. But if you see one of the kelim in the base of Mikdash with the word tzela as a preposition, also meaning on the side of, but that's not going to be ma'akev. What's tzela a reference to? So the tzela is a reference to the shulchan. The pasuk says, v'ashulchan titen al tzela tzafon. So that's not going to be ma'akev. That's according to these amarayim. V'amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Nachman. B'shem Rabbi Yonasan v'afilu tzela ma'akev. So the Gemara quotes the second opinion, which is that even when you see the word tzela, but which we saw by the Shulchan, that's going to be ma'akev. V'amar Rabbi Lav b'shem Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman. Now we're on the top of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. And so the Gemara quotes the third opinion amongst the Amoraim. Afilu sima ma'akev. When you see the word sima, that's going to be ma'akev. Most of the Kalim, you're going to find the word sima placed next to it. So according to these Amoraim, notably the last time we just saw Rav Shmuel bar Nachman. So you need all the kelim in order for the Beis Hamikdash to be operational, and in order to bring a karban in the Beis Hamikdash, so you need all the kelim in place. Now this is great if you subscribe to Rav Meir Shita, but Rav Meir, as we just learned in the Brisa, Zadas Yachid, according to this Brisa that was presented to us by Rav Yehuda Gad Gadoz. And now that means that all these Amoraim are up against the Shita of the Chachamim, and that's very difficult. It's hard to imagine that all these Amoraim are only siding with the Shita of Rav Meir and against the Shita of the Chachamim. And even all these Amoraim, by the way, are not in perfect alignment with the Shita of Rav Meir. The Shita of Rav Meir presumably is that you need all the Kalim to be in place. And we didn't see that with all these Amoraim. Maybe the last Amora that we saw, Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachman, is a good match for the Sheet of Rav Meir, but it doesn't, that the larger issue is that all these Amoraim are against the Sheet of the Chachamim. That seems to be unlikely. So Amar Rabbi Chanina, so the Gemara says, fine. So what we'll do is as follows. We're going to accept the Brais of Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gadoz. We're also going to accept the Chachamim Shita, that in order to bring a karban, all you need is the Mizbech, and presumably he's referring to the Mizbech Achitzon. So let's assume that all that's correct. And these Amoraim are not rubbing against the Shita of the Chachamim. Am Rabbi Chanina kam ba'avodah shebifnim kam kan sheba'avodah shebechutz. It depends on what kind of avodah we're talking about. If we're talking about the avodah that's done outside, meaning your standard karban, which is shechted out in the azara, and the blood is sprinkled out on the outer mizbeach. So for those kinds of karbanos, so I don't need all the kelim in place, and that's the shita of the chachamim, according to the brisa. These amarayim, they're talking about the essential nature of either the menorah, or the menorah and the shulchan, or the menorah and the shulchan and all the other kelim. So all these other amarayim, they're talking about avodah shebifnim. Then we're talking about avodah that's done in the actual heichal itself. What avodah is done in the inner heichal? The kataris is done daily on the inner, in the heichal. That's an avodah shebifnim. On Yom Kippur, most of the avodah, I don't know about most, but a lot of the avodah, let's say like that, a lot of the avodah on Yom Kippur is done on the in the heichal. And there are other types of avodas that are also done in the Heichal as well. Not to go through, right, not to cover everything right now, but the basic distinction that the Gemara is now making is that for Shabbat avodah b'shabachutz, you don't need the kelim to be in place. For Shabbat b'fnim, you need a certain amount of the kelim to be in place. How much of the kelim do we need to be in place? So reference the three opinions of the Amorim that we just went through. Good. So that is that's the first part of today's daf. Continuing now in the Gemara. Amar Rebbe Chanina. We're going to go back now to our Mishnah. We're talking about the ramp for the Parah Adumah. So there was a ramp constructed for the setting up the Parah Adumah. The Parah Adumah, in terms of the preparation of the Parah Adumah, burning a red cow and taking the ashes and mixing it with water and creating that solution in order to be metame anybody who's tame mace. So this is a process that was a rarity in history, right? The Mishnah and Parah details that there were a total historically of 9 Parah Adumas that were burnt and the ashes were used. The actual setting up of the Parah Adumah, so that is, and the burning of the Parah Adumah, so that is described in great detail with a lot of measures that were made in order to ensure that its preparation was done in a higher state of Tahara. When we get to the beginning of Yuma, which we're going to be starting in about 2 weeks from today. So there we're going to be giving a description of the preparation of the Parah Adumah. Also, the second parak of Sukkah, this is just coming to my mind right now. Second parak of Sukkah also describes it in great detail. And so as part of the preparation of the Parah Adumah, so ramps were constructed. These ramps were to ensure that anyone that was involved in the preparation of the Parah Adumah would not come into contact with any Tumas Mace. And these ramps were constructed in a manner to ensure that they would be totally secure from any type of Tumas Mace. Okay, for now, that is a really rough sketch of a description of these ramps. How were these ramps constructed? Not physically, but financially. Who's paying for these ramps? So you remember the Mishnah that we did in yesterday's daf, so the Mishnah recorded a machlokas on this very issue. The Mishnah yesterday's daf on Yud Amud Beis describes a machlokas. The Tana Kama of the Mishnah says that the Kevish Parah, that the ramps that were made for the Parah Adumah was coming from the Chumas Alishka. On the other hand, the Gemara quotes the opinion of Abishal. Abishal in the Mishnah yesterday's daf says that the Kevish Parah is coming from the actual Kohen Gadol himself. He would personally finance these ramps. Okay, and what exactly is an akudas machlokas? So I didn't suggest yesterday. I'm not prepared to suggest today. But anyway, but we certainly have a machlokas on this issue. The Gemara now is going to comment on the opinion of Abishol, Amar Rebbe Chanina. Shachris Gedol, Hayab Ibnei Kohanim Gedolim. So the Kohanim Gedolim were arrogant. Now that's an accusation. That's a significant accusation to level against these Kohen Gadols. Now, again, when we get to the Gemara in Yuma, we're going to be talking about that during Bais Sheni, during the Second Temple period, after Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was the first Kohen Gadol. He was from Mishayari Knesset HaGadolah. So he served in the Beis HaMikdash, if I remember correctly, for the first 40 years of Bais Sheni. But after Shimon HaTzadik, so from that point going forward, the Kohen Gadol, the state of the Kohen Gadol was a train wreck, right? The Gemara doesn't use that language. It's a little bit of a modern term to describe it. But it was a train wreck. These Kohen Gadols were not necessarily fit for the job. They would die on a very frequent basis. We'll get to the Gemara in Yuma. We're going to be describing that in more detail. So over here, Rebbe Chanina is now going to make making a comment on the Kohen Gadol in general, based on our Mishnah. Why? First of all, how much money is it in order to finance the ramps? So the Gemara describes it as Shishim Kikari Kesef. I don't know how much it is. I do know, however, that's a lot of money. Okay, that much is clear. Shayakim Shishol Parah all made. So so in order for this ramp to be standing, it cost that much money. These Kohen Gadol, so they all felt that, look, I know it was a tremendous expense for the previous Kohen Gadol to purchase the ramp, but I'm not going to be using the ramp of the previous Kohen Gadol, meaning it's beneath me to do so. So I'm going to build my new ramp. So you see that every Kohen Gadol now is building their own ramp. Now, how many Kohen Gadols are actually building a ramp? So if there only are 9 historically Parah Adumas that were prepared, so we can't be giving voice to that many Kohen Gadols that are building their own ramp. But still, Rebbe Chanina says, by virtue of the fact that we see that there were multiple ramps that were built, so once again, it shows to the general nature of the arrogance of these Kohen Gadols. So Elososo, Vono, Samishalo. They would deconstruct the previous Kohen Gadol's ramp, and they would build their own ramp. So fine, so that was a critical comment made by Rabbi Chanina. If you subscribe to the Shita of Abba Shaul, the Gemara goes on to say, Hesiv, Rabbi Ula, Kume, Rabbi Manah. So the Gemara now challenges Vatine. What about the following? And that is that we learned in the Brisa Shimon HaTzadik, Shtei Paros Asa, that in the lifetime of Shimon HaTzadik, so he prepared two paradumas. Okay, what exactly occurred in the short lifespan? I mean, it wasn't that short, but 40 years again, I'm pretty sure with that number. So what occurred that required two paradumas in his lifetime? So the Gemara over here does not give us any detail, and I'm not open to speculating right now. But whatever the case is, it was very strange that two were constructed. And the Braisa goes on to say, and it happens to be the Shimon HaTzadik himself. Now, we're not going to, for a moment, impugn the character of Shimon HaTzadik, and he constructed two ramps. So, now, are you at all prepared to say that Shimon HaTzadik was arrogant? So the Gemara says, so you can't learn a lesson regarding the Kohanim in general just because they build new ramps, because we know as a Masorah that Shimon HaTzadik built two ramps, and we are not prepared to say in any way that Shimon HaTzadik had this kind of character flaw. So my kedon, so the Gemara says, okay, so we need an explanation over here in terms of why he built two ramps. So I'll say, Maila hayu bipara, silsa hayu bipara. So the Gemara says the reason why is because of the elevated Kedusha and Tahara that we had in terms of preparing the Paraduma. And again, when we get to the Gemara in Yuma and in Sukkah, so we're going to see that they went to great lengths in order to ensure a certain Tahara standard higher than necessary. Right, again, I keep promoting these Gemaras, but we're going to get to them im yirtzeh Hashem, and much higher than necessary levels of Tahara, and as an extreme higher level of Tahara, so even Shimon HaTzadik himself, who constructed the first ramp, but when the need came to building, to prepare a new Paraduma, so he actually built another ramp, and again, this just spoke to the higher level, higher degree of Tahara that existed in terms of the preparation of the Paraduma. Okay, so all the Gemara just basically accomplished over here is that this critical comment to Rabbi Chanina is unsupported. So the Gemara basically takes back that critical comment. The criticism may in fact be true, but you can't use our Mishnah to make that point. To me, the Gemara just simply has one end note over here regarding the ramps that were used for the Paraduma. Zizan uksalam hayuos mikan mikan kedei shelo yetzu v'yatzu akonim v'yitamu v'yatzitzu, sorry. The Atzitzu Okanim V'yitamu. And what was created was basically, sideposts on the ramps. So that the whole purpose of the ramps was that the Kohanim would be in a protected environment where they would not come into contact with Tumas Meis. And if the ramps didn't have a side, so first of all, you of course have the risk of the Kohen falling off the side of the ramp. But aside from that, from a halachic perspective, well, there was also halacha to putting in a post in order to make sure you don't fall down. That's called a makeh. But aside from that, but if the Kohen were to peer over the side, so there may be tumah on the side, off to the side, and if the Kohen extends his head over, so he may come into contact with that tumas mace. So therefore, the posts, the rails that are put against the side of these bridges were there in order to make sure that the Kohen would be totally protected and insulated by these ramps. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the of a possible criticism of the Kohanim, but the Gemara, at least from our Mishnah, does not want to use it in order to criticize the Kohanim. Rabbi Kiva Omer Ein Mistakrin. We had a basic machlokas in our Mishnah in terms of the using surplus funds of the Beis HaMikdash and making a business out of it. Meaning that if we have any excess fund, if we have any surplus, so Rabbi Yishmael had a suggestion, and not just a suggestion, it was his opinion, that what the Beis HaMikdash is allowed to do is basically capitalize on that money. In other words, so you have funds, you have additional funds now. So according to the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael, so basically, you can turn a profit with that money. Obviously, all the profit gained is going to go to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Shmuel thought it was a great idea. And Rabbi Akiva says, no, you're simply not allowed to do it. Now, the Mishnah over here in yesterday's daf didn't explain why, according to Rabbi Akiva, you're not allowed to do it. But there are two basic reasons why one shouldn't do so. The Gemara didn't say this. The Gemara in Menachos, Gemara a couple places, but the Gemara in Menachos goes on to explain. According to Rabbi Akiva, so one issue is very simple, and that is that anytime you engage in business, so there's a risk, and you're at risk to lose the capital. And as we're going to see together in our Gemara right now, that seems to be the concern that goes behind the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. And by the way, the Mishnah yesterday's daf said Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanina's Gana Kohanim were super conservative, and they said that this is not a good idea. So one concern obviously is a loss of principle. So that's one concern. And the other concern is that, look, this is the Beis HaMikdash. Like, we don't play games with the money of the Beis HaMikdash, right? The Beis HaMikdash is considered a Makom Ashiris, and Ein Anias Be Makom Ashiris. It's just simply not appropriate to engage in this kind of conduct with any kind of money, any kind of funds of the Beis HaMikdash. That's another possibility, but our Gemara over here seems to be focusing more on the first side, on the potential loss of the principle. So to that, now the Gemara makes the following comment. So in our Mishnah, we had the Shita of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanan Niskana Kohanim that you cannot do this. You cannot just play around with the surplus funds and try to make business with it and can't make profit with it. So what the Gemara now is going to tell us is, what if there is not going to be any loss to the principle? And how do we know that? You don't know that when you go into business. And the answer is that you're going to personally guarantee the principal, meaning you, the operator of the fund, say, look, I'd like to invest and I would like to capitalize with this money. And if there's going to be a loss to the principal, so I will personally guarantee the principal. So the Gemara says, would Rabbi Akiva be happy with that? So the Gemara here, interesting, the Gemara doesn't quote anybody. The Gemara just simply says, Elim Ratzah, Yiyah Ha'hefzit Shalav Aschal HaHektesh. So let's say that you're the CFO and you yourself are promising that if there's any loss to the principal, you're going to make up for that loss. So under those circumstances, mutter would be totally permissible to do so. And presumably, again, the Gemara here is not super clear, but presumably that would be according to the Shita Rabbi Akiva. Meaning if you're Rabbi Shmuel is comfortable with the idea of capitalizing on the money, even if you don't promise to pay for loss of principal. So presumably the Gemara over here is going according to the Shita of even according to Rabbi Akiva. Kehada, the Gemara says, I'll tell you a story that goes just like this. And that is Bar Zemina. So a character that we have not heard in the Bavli, at least to my recollection. So he's Pake Gabe Midal Diasman. So he was in charge of funds that were collected for orphans. And also Vishala Rabbi Manah. He asked Rabbi Manah Amarle. And Rabbi Manah said to Bar Zemina, so in Bais, if you want, So the loss, if in other words, if you're prepared to guarantee the loss, meaning if you yourself are going to assure that if there's going to be any loss to principal, you're going to make up for it, and you would like to now try to capitalize on this money, so you could do so, and as far as the profit is concerned, so you can share the profit. Now, the Gemara, that, which in of itself, by the way, is super interesting, meaning one could imagine that the profit should go to the orphans, meaning if the funds are going to the orphans, the profit should go to the orphan. The idea over here that there could be profit sharing with even the administrator, okay, that seems to be a little bit strange. The Gemara does not comment that on all, but the Gemara says, but if he does promise to make up for any loss of principal, Shari, under those circumstances, to be permitted. The Gemara tells a second story. Rabbi Chia Bar Adi's pocket gabe midal diyasmin. So another story, it's the same story, but with a different amora. Rabbi Chia Bar Adi was also in charge of funds for the orphans, Vavid Kenan. He did exactly that, meaning he took the money, he made business with the money, capitalized on the money, and what he did is that the prophecies went to the orphans. Okay, and again, with the assurances that if there's any loss of principle, then he would make good to the loss of principle. Good ad kan. That takes us to the end of that discussion. Moser Peros, the Gemara now is going to be describing that category in the Mishnah, the fund of what's called Moser Peros. Now, what is Moser Peros? So the Gemara says Masisa de Rabbi Shmali. So you know what Moser Peros is? Peros is basically the prophet. But the profit only works if you subscribe to the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says that you're allowed to capitalize with the surplus funds. The Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef Patam Asisa, a Moser Peros Kar LaHektesh. So the Rabbi Chia Bar Yosef, when explaining the Mishnah and explaining this category of Moser Peros, he says, what happens to it? So the profits goes to Hektesh. Good. So Moser Nesachim Zusa Revis. Now, there's another category in our Mishnah, what's called Moser Nesachim. So what is Moser Nesachim? So Moser Nesachim is Sa'ar Revis. Now, what is Sa'ar Revis? So we're going to be discussing this in, not tomorrow's Daf, Yud Gimel. So the a couple days from now. But just quickly, to give a rundown of what Sa'ar Revis is. So Sa'ar Revis is a reference to vendors who are selling to the Beis HaMikdash and contracting prices. Now, when you contract the price, on a typical sale, so when you contract the price, so we know that that prices fluctuate. So anyone who's involved in the future market, I'm not one of them. So anyone involved in the future market knows that there's a big market in making sure and locking in a price. So when you are a vendor and the Beis HaMikdash now locks in a price with you, so you have to understand, the Gemara is going to tell us this in a couple days from now, that when you're selling to the Beis HaMikdash, so you are locking in a price, but only to the advantage of the Beis HaMikdash and to the disadvantage of the vendor. Now, what kind of vendor wants to go into such an arrangement? The answer is a vendor who wants to go into and wants to fund the Beis HaMikdash and wants to provide for the Beis HaMikdash, meaning it's a big schus to do so, even though there is a potential loss. Now, what's that potential loss? So basically, it goes like this. Let's say you are a vendor and you're contracting a price with the Beis HaMikdash, and it happens to be that right now, for a seller, you could buy three saw. Saw is a quantity of grain. So you could buy three saw with one seller, and it happens to be now, there's a big drop in price, for the grains, and now, the grains could be purchased with one seller. You could get four saw for that one seller. So as a vendor, as a provider, so what you have to do now, even though you locked in for three sa'ah for a sella, you have to now provide four sa'ah for one sella, as long as the price dropped. Now, obviously, that means for you, the vendor, that's going to be a loss, but that's just simply part of the deal of providing for the Beis HaMikdash. So what is that now? Fourth sa'ah for the Beis HaMikdash, that's a profit. So that is the category of Moser Nesachim. So that's the Sa'ar Revis. So again, according to according to Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, in explaining our Mishnah, the two categories of this extra profit that the Mishnah is describing, Moser Peiros, that's the profit from doing business. Again, that is assuming that that line of the Mishnah is subscribing to Rabbi Shmuel, and Moser Nesachim is referring to the four Sa'ar that we just got done describing. That's all according to Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef. Rabbi Yochanan, Patar Masnisan, Moser Peiros Zusa Revis. Now, Rav Yochanan does not explain the Mishnah in that way, because presumably he does not want to have the Mishnah, these categories of the Mishnah, only go according to Rabbi Shmuel. So Rav Yochanan is going to give a different explanation, notably as follows. According to Rav Yochanan, Patar Masnisan, Moser Peiros Zusa Revis. So the Moser Peiros category of the Mishnah, that's referring to the fourth Sa'ar we just got done explaining. Even if I don't subscribe to Rabbi Shmuel, but still the Sa'ar Revis is a possibility of a potential profit that can be gained by the Beis HaMikdash and Moser Nesachim LeBeirutzim. Now, as far as Moser Nesachim is concerned, that's referring to the excess. The excess over here is a reference to the overage of measuring. That means to say is as follows: when you're a vendor and you're selling to the Beis HaMikdash, so you're going to be measuring in a kli. When you're measuring in a kli, so what you're going to be doing, is that you're going to be measuring whatever the measuring cup is, and the amount that you're going to measure is going to go a little bit above the actual measuring cup. Now, when the Beis HaMikdash is going to use whatever's in that measuring cup, they're going to level it off, and then they're going to use whatever they need to use. Obviously, that leveling off is going to provide them a little bit of excess. So according to Rav Yochanan, when the Mishnah uses the term of Moser Nesachim, it's talking about that little extra, that little overage. Good. That is according to Rav Yochanan. So what the gain of Rav Yochanan is now that you're able to explain the Mishnah without having to ride on the Shita of Rabbi Yishmael. V'leisrei l'Rabbi Chiya by Yosef l'Berutzim. Now, Rabbi Chiya, the Gemara starts off with a small question, which is Rabbi Chiya by Yosef. So he doesn't subscribe to this idea of Beirutzim, right? The little bit that goes over the actual measuring cup, meaning that's a reality. So I'm Rabbi Chizkia. So Madanafel Asar Revi is Nafel Beirutzim. So Rabbi Chizkia says that's easy, meaning when we describe the Sa'ar Revi'is, you can put in that category as well the Birutzim. So it comes out good. Now, al dati d'Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef Nicha, so Amos Takrim B'shal Hekdesh, Aflo B'shal Aniyim, Lefichach Zeh V'zeh, Lo Hayimodim B'Peiros. Now, according to Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, it happens to be that the Mishnah works out pretty well. Because if you remember the end of the Mishnah in yesterday's daf, so you had the sheet of Rabbi Akiva that says that you're not allowed to profit with Hekdesh, nor are you allowed to profit with any funds of the poor. So therefore, Lefichach, now when you read the end of the Mishnah makes perfect sense. Zev v'zev, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanina v'skanek ha'anim, lo hayumodim b'peiros. They just simply would not agree that there was this fund called peiros, because they would be dismissive of the sheet of Rabbi Yishmael. And I know there's a lot to keep straight over here, but assuming that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yishmael, which is Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, so then the category of peiros is profit, but profit only is a category if you allow for profiting, with capitalizing on the funds. And the end of the Mishnah that says that Rabbi Akiva dismisses the category of peiros, yeah, so because he dismisses the sheet of Rabbi Yishmael. So that works out great, meaning the reading of the Mishnah works out really good according to Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. Al dati de Rav Yochanan Kasha. So the Gemara says, but according to Rav Yochanan, how is Rabbi Akiva dismissing the category of peiros? You don't dismiss the category of peiros. The category of peiros is not profiting, but rather, according to Rav Yochanan, the category of peiros is when there's price fluctuation. Va'ataninan, and we're going to see it together in the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel. Va'ataninan, amdu mishal shi'isapek me'arba. So you have this price fluctuation, and this is a possibility of the Beis HaMikdash profiting, not by doing a business, but just simply by the price fluctuation. V'taninan, zeh v'zeh lo hayumodim b'peiros. And yet the Mishnah says that Rabbi Akiva dismisses the category of peiros. What do you mean you're dismissing the category of peiros? There is a category of peiros, even according to Rabbi Akiva, considering the possibility of price fluctuation. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to have to do is that we're going to reread the last line of the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yochanan. Lo hayumodim b'peiros b'keitzel mizbeach, havamodim hayu b'kli sharis. No, there's a category of peiros. What Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Chanina are objecting to is how that money's to be allocated. What they're dismissing is that it's not going to go to Keitz HaMizbech. It's not going to go to purchasing of carbonolas for the slow time of the season. Avamodim hayu b'kli sharis. But rather, what they say is that what you could do with this extra revenue that's gained by the Beis HaMikdash is that you could use it in order to purchase kelim. That's how you read the end of the Mishnah. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Akiva is not dismissing the category of peiros altogether. They're just objecting to the allocation of that money. Okay. Ad kedom beritzit tzibor. The Gemara now has discussed the beritzim. That when you measure, so as a supplier, you're going to go over the measuring cup. And that overage is going to serve as another revenue stream. So ad kedom beritzit tzibor. Ve'afilu beritzit yachid. Now it's true that if there's overage from a carbon seabor, so then I can understand how you could use that to purchase kalim. But afilu berutz yachid. But what if, let's say, it's coming from an individual carbon, meaning a person's bringing a carbon on his own? It's a private carbon funding out of his own pocket, and now you have the overage. In other words, again, he's going to be providing wine and oil and flour for his nesachim. And again, there's going to be that little overage, and that little overage now is going to be leveled off, and that's going to go to the Beis HaMikdash. But you're allowed to purchase kelim with that money? That's private money. How could you purchase kelim with that money? So the Gemara says, yeah, but let's remind ourselves of a Gemara that we did just 2 days ago. So the Gemara says, yeah, don't you remember? We had the Braisa Isha Shasa Kisonslav Nakshera over Vashi concern with Sibor. Yeah, but there was an opinion, and if you remember well, that was really the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara tried to argue that point, but just to say it simply, it's the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, that what you are allowed to do is you're allowed to take private money and basically give it with a Belev Shalem and donate it to the public need. So ad kedon berutzei la ve'afilu berutzei. Right, Yerushalmi's discussions end abruptly. Good. So that's the end of that point. So the Gemara says ad kedon berutzei la. The Gemara says, now wait 1 second. I certainly understand that when you have the overage on measuring oil, and wine. So I totally understand under those circumstances how it's going to have kedusha. Afilo berutz yavesh, but you're going to even say when you're measuring dry. Now, when you're measuring dry, so let's say, for example, flour. So what I do is I put flour in the kli sharis. And now there's overage. Now that overage obviously is physically over the lip of the kli. Now it's not going to be invested with kedusha because it didn't go in the actual kli itself. Now when it comes to oil and it comes to wine, anything that goes over, these are thick liquids, so they are going to go over. But at one point in time, we're going to be assuming a distribution of the wine and oil, and we're going to assume that every bit of that liquid actually was at one point in time in the kli itself. So I understand how when measuring a liquid, the overages are going to have kedusha. But when you're talking about yavesh, so the overages are going to have kedusha. So the Gemara says, "Ke'ayid etanin etaman anechasim shekichu bekli v'nimtza hazevach pasul im yesham zevach acher." So you kervayim all v'im lanu, right? We have the girsa of lav, but in the parentheses lav, but im lanu yufsulu belina. So the Mishnah tells us. This is a Mishnah in Menachos. The Mishnah tells us that when measuring liquids, so anything that goes into the kli is going to have kedusha. Even that which goes over, that flows over, is also going to have kedusha because, again, that assumption that at one point in time it was a kli. But this is only when talking about liquids, not when it comes to solids. So the Gemara kind of just leaves off with, you know, when there's overage of solids, right, the flour that's above the kli, so it's not imbued with kedusha. Okay, the Gemara just seems to let that point sit there, and the Gemara doesn't really pose it as a question, doesn't really challenge it, but fine. That is the that is the Gemara's observation, a distinction to be made between the overage of a liquid versus the overage of a solid. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of the first half of today's daf. Moving ahead. Let's give a brief introduction as we are about to start now the topic of the Ketores. So the Ketores is the incense that's burned daily in the base of Mikdash. It was burned. A mana of it was burned every day. Half of the mana was burned in the morning, and the other half is burned in the afternoon. Good. When we went through Masechta Tamid, we talked about this in slightly more detail about the burning of the Ketores. It's part of the Avodah. Where was the Ketores burnt? So it was burnt on the Mizbeach Hazav that was in the Heichal. Okay, now in terms of the preparation of the Ketores, so it was a bunch of spices that were mixed together. Okay, the really non-specific description. The Gemara in Krisos gives us a more detailed description, right? Towards the beginning of Krisos, Davav, Dav Zion, thereabouts, gives us a more descriptive, a very precise description of exactly what are the spices that go into the Ketores. However, the Gemara over there in Krisos goes on to describe, and by the way, it's there in the Masecht in Krisos. Because that Mishnah over there, the first Mishnah in Krisos, describes that one of the Yisurim in the Torah, that one is going to be subject to a Kari's penalty, is being Mefaten Ketores. If you or I were to prepare the Ketores, so for not for Beis HaMikdash purposes, so that is an Isser D'Oraisa, and not only is it an Isser D'Oraisa, but with it a penalty of Kari's, right? A serious Isser of the Torah to prepare ourselves. Anyway, so the Gemara over there in Krisos goes through exactly how it's to be done. The point that we need to focus on right now is the following. How much Ketores is prepared? It's prepared at the beginning of the year, and 368 mana of the Ketores is prepared. Now, with one mana being burnt every day, so 368 is more than what we need. Now, I know it's going to sound funny, but let's assume a solar year. Now, I know we don't operate with a solar calendar. We operate with a lunar calendar. But it doesn't really matter because anyway, they're going to get justified and eventually they're going to average out. So let's just assume a solar year. So a solar year has 365 days. So that means that there were three additional mana at the end of every year. Now, with those three additional mana, so there is two handfuls of the Ketores that's taken by the Kohen Gadol and burnt in the Kodesh HaKodashim on Yom Kippur. So, but that only accounts for an additional half mana. Typical handful of Ketores taken by the Kohen Gadol for Yom Kippur is two handfuls, but that only results in a half mana. So on an annual basis, there's going to be a surplus of at least 2.5 mana every year, right? You probably remember when, if in fact you say Karbanos in the morning, so it says that eventually what's going to happen is that over time it's going to accumulate significantly. To the point where if you're having 2.5 mana every year, so after 60 years, you already have now at least 120, it's more obviously, but 120 mana additional. So the Mishnah Krisa says that after about 60 or 70 years, eventually what happens is that at the beginning of the year, you don't have to make a full 368. You could just simply make half of that and that would be fine. Okay. Anyway, comes out over here is that on an annual basis, there's going to be surplus of 2.5 mana. Now, what do I do with that surplus? So the answer is very simple, but it's not. I'll say it simply, and that is just simply roll it over to the next year. In other words, with that 2.5 mana surplus, so just simply roll it over to the next year. So that means to say that for the next year, we're going to start off by preparing 368, add the 2.5 from the previous year, that gets you to 370.5. So that's the easy way to do it, but it's not that easy. Why? Because Ketores is a carbon seabor, and carbon seabors have to be purchased with this year's money. So rolling over last year's surplus to this year is going to present the problem that the surplus from last year was purchased with last year's money. And if I'm just going to roll it over to this year, well, then I'm using Ketores purchased with last year's money for this year's Avoda. So here's what we're going to have to do. This is the problem that the Mishnah is looking to solve. And that is basically what I would like to do now is I would like to deconsecrate the Ketores, then repurchase it with this year's money. That's the problem that the Mishnah is looking to solve for. So with that introduction, so the Mishnah now starts off by giving us what the solution is going to be. So Moser Ketores Ma'ayu Osim Ba, so with the surplus Ketores from the previous year. So what they would do is the following, Mafrishim Mimenu Schar Umnin. So the Mishnah over here is going to be providing for us three steps in terms of what to do. So the first thing we're going to do is that we're going to leave over enough Ketores in order to pay for the workers. We had various workers working in the Beis HaMikdash. And then Umechalan Oso Al Ma'osa Umnim, money that was set aside to pay for, to pay the workers are going to be set aside. The Venosin Oso La'umnim B'scharam, the Ketores now is going to be deconsecrated onto that money. Then the actual Ketores itself is going to be given to the workers as payment for their services. Then what we're going to do is that we're going to buy back the Ketores from the workers using now this year's Truma. And that's basically how we're going to be able to accomplish rolling over the Ketores from last year to this year, but using this year's money. So again, the three steps are, I know that was complicated, but the three steps are, is that number one, we're going to be deconsecrating the Ketorah left over from last year's money. On other monies that were set aside to pay the workers. So now that money that was set aside, in a moment the Gemara is going to ask, the Gemara is going to wonder, what money are we talking about? Because if that money already was Hektish money, I can't deconsecrate the Ketores onto that money. So stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question. But step number one is that we're going to deconsecrate the Ketores onto money set aside for that was used to pay for the workers. Now we're going to give that's step number one. Step number two is that we're going to give the Ketores to the actual workers themselves. And step number three is that the Beis HaMikdash is going to buy it back with the Truma Chadasha, with this year's Truma. Now with that buyback, the Kedusha now is going to go from that money into the Ketores. And now the workers are going to walk away with the money. And at the same time, the problem of the rollover and making sure that the Ketores is now going to be used with this year's money has been solved for. Now, it seems to be that there are a couple of additional steps that are unnecessary. So the Rishonim, throughout Shas, address why there seems to be like extra steps over here involved. I'm not going to get involved in that discussion, but if you're wondering, it seems like we are like one or two steps too many. So the Rishonim are bothered by that. Now, the Imba Charish Bezmano, and then the Mishnah makes a comment, which is that, look, if the new Shkalim are ready and prepared for, so then no problem whatsoever. The Imlav, however, let's say we have no Truma Chadasha readily at this point in time. It's a funny Mishnah, admittedly. What do you mean we have no Truma Chadasha ready at this point in time? Meaning, haven't we been collecting now since the month of Adar? And how could we have no money at this point in time? I'm not sure, but the Mishnah over here says that if we don't have any Truma Chadasha at this point in time, so then Mina Yeshana, so then you're going to be purchasing the incense with last year's money. Now, obviously, not really sure why we would go through the whole process only to then repurchase it with last year's money. I guess the Mishnah is just simply telling us, look, if you have no money, so then you use money from last year. But then why would you go through the whole process whatsoever? I am a little bit confused by the Mishnah, admittedly. But anyway, okay, that's the end of the Mishnah. V'lo nimsa hektesh mitzchal al hektesh. Okay, so the Gemara over here now is bothered by the following. In step number one of the Mishnah, so we're going to be deconsecrating the Ketores on monies that we were ready to pay the workers with. Monies we were ready to pay with the workers with. So isn't that money already have Kedusha? Meaning that's money that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. So how can we deconsecrate the Ketores onto the monies where you're ready to pay the workers with? Doesn't that money already have Kedusha? And that's exactly the Gemara's question. That Hektish is being Mischal on Hektish, and that doesn't work. Deconsecration by definition means I have something with Kedusha, I have something without Kedusha, and therefore I'm able to move Kedusha from one to another. But if the money already has Kadosh, so then the step number one doesn't even get off the ground. So Kate said, so the Gemara says, yeah, I know it's a problem, but we also already have the solution, which is Amar Rabbi Shimon Bar Bisna, so maybe Maos Mechalan Al Binyan. So this goes back to what we learned just a couple days ago, which is that when workers are working, so what happens now is that they're going to put the actual, let's say they're working on the building, they'll put the stone in place. Once the stone is in place, so then the monies are going to be deconsecrated on the actual stones themselves. And incorporated in that is going to be also the wages that are going to be used to pay the workers. Remember, the Gemara asked the question, how is that stone going to have in it also the labor that's involved as well? Meaning, somehow the deconsecration is able to include both the goods and the labor? The Gemara asked that question. The Gemara gave an answer. I admitted when we read the Gemara, I'm going to admit again, I didn't fully understand the Gemara's answer. But anyway, but suffice to say for our purposes right now, that the monies are going to be deconsecrated, and now you have funds ready to pay the workers and funds that are deconsecrated. And now with those funds that are deconsecrated, now we can get to step number one, which is that we're going to take the Ketores and now deconsecrate onto those funds. And then step number two, I'm just going through the three steps again. I know it's complicated. I really don't mind going through it again. Step number two is then we're going to take the Ketores, give it to the workers for the services that were rendered. Then step number three is that we're going to buy back from the workers the Ketores with the monies from this year. Good. So those are the three steps with also the Gemara solving for that first detail of how is the Beis HaMikdash having deconsecrated funds. So, and then I should have just read the Gemara. I'm going to read it now. Maybe Ketores Mechal Aleihem, Benos Nosela, Umnim Bischara. Okay, the Gemara, that was just the end of the Gemara talking about how we have the deconsecrated money. Osan Amaz Ma'ayu Osinba. The money that the Ketores was deconsecrated on. So basically what happens now is that we had the Ketores that was deconsecrated onto money. So good. So now what do you do with that money? Meaning that money now has the Kedusha of last year's Ketores. So what do I do with that money? So Rebbe Omer Ani Yasala Beskar Mulave Satinas. So he says, I'll tell you what you do with that money. Use that money in order to pay for the workers who prepare the Ketores. Shayu Bikim Bipitama Ketores from Maisa Lechem Apanim. So these are families that were expert in the making of the Ketores and the baking of the Lechem Apanim. There were certain skills that were involved in both of those disciplines. Skills that only were kept as a family secret by these particular families. Right? Elsewhere, the Gemara talks about the fact that these families preserve the secrets of the Ketores and the Lechem Apanim. By the way, the secrets involved, I'm not giving away secrets right now, but the secrets involved that when it comes to the Ketores, one secret was the burning of the Ketores so that the smoke would go straight up. And when it comes to the Lechem Apanim, it would be the baking of the Lechem Apanim and somehow the bread, I call it bread, by the way, it happens to have been non-chametz, but the bread wouldn't collapse. Okay, anyway, they had particular family secrets in terms of preparing it. So the monies that we deconsecrated of last year's surplus Ketores are then going to be used to pay the workers. So the Gemara says, yeah, that works if we owe them money from last year, meaning that we're going to be paying the workers with this money, again, that had the Kedusha of last year's Ketores, but only for last year's work. You can't pay them with work that they did for this year. Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai. Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai asked the following question. Lo hayu chayav lemos mishar rishona. So let's say we just didn't owe the money from last year. In other words, that we were already all paid up from last year. So let's just reset the question. Now what do I do? Meaning I started off with my ketoros from last year and I deconsecrated onto money. Now what do I do with that money? So in the event now where I don't have workers from last year, what do I do with it? So also Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai. And the Gemara in a moment is going to know. Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai is the one who asked the question, and now he's answering his own question. The Gemara is going to wonder. So also Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai, b'shem Rabbi Yossi, and mekaitzim behemes mizbech. So what you do is keitzim mizbech again by purchasing karbanos for the slow season. So Rabbi Bar Bar Kohen by kumei Rabbi Yossi mechalfe shitase de Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai. So the Gemara says that the Rabbi Bar Bar Kohen was bothered, and that is that Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai asked the question and v'cha pashtalei, and then he answered his own question. That's a little bit strange. So the Gemara says hadetzrichalei. So the Gemara says yeah. When he asked the question, so he was asking the question regarding kli sharis and hadepshitalei beketam izbeach. In other words, that when when he first asked the question, he thought that the question was going to be regarding the purchasing of the funds were going to be used to purchase a klisharis. But then what he figured out was, no, I'm not going to purchase it with a klisharis, but rather what we're going to do is that we're going to use it for Kates HaMizbech. The Ispal Gon, the Gemara now points out that the Havamina and the Maskana that Rabbi Chiya Bar Babai had is based on the following machlokas. So Pitma Bechulin, when you are preparing the ketoros and you're doing so in a non-kli sharis, Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Chanina amar psula. That's no good. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi amar kshira. So we basically here have a machlokas as to whether or not ketoros can be prepared in a non-kli sharis. And the Gemara now goes on to explain. My Talmud, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina says that it has to be prepared in a klisharis. Why? Because the Torah, in describing the ketoros, says kodeshi shiteyeh havyasa bekodesh. That in order to prepare the ketoros, it has to be done bekodesh, meaning not only in the azara but in a klisharis. My Talmud, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. On the other side, you have Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So kodeshi shiteyeh ba mitrumalishka. Kodeshi just simply means that you have to be purchasing with trumalishka. That, in that regard, it's Kodesh, but in terms of if it's preparation, it can be done prepared in a non-klisharis. I'm Rav Yossi bar Rabbi Bone, Asya de Rav Yossi Rabbi Chanina Kishmuel. Comes out that the Shita Rav Yossi Rabbi Chanina is going like Shmuel, the Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi ke Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is going to go like Rav Yochanan. The Gemara goes on to explain what just happened over here. Did Taninan. So over here, we're going to start with a Mishnah. The Mishnah coming up in tomorrow's daf. Hikdish nechasa v'hayuban dvarim ru'uim v'karbon ha'sibor. So in tomorrow's daf, we're going to be talking about the following. A person has now decided that he no longer needs his worldly possessions and is makdish all of his worldly possessions. And amongst his worldly possessions, he has things that are fit for karbon ha'sibor. What is that making a description for? So we're going to see in tomorrow's daf. It's good hachana for tomorrow. Rabbi Yochanan amar ketoros. Rav Yochanan says that he is talking about ketoros. We'll go through tomorrow in terms of why Rav Yochanan necessarily feels that we're talking about ketoros. So he says it's going like ketoros. So that means to say that you are being makdish that which you have in your own private home. And Rav Yochanan in that Mishnah says that what are we talking about over here? We're talking about ketoros. Good. So that means that Rav Yochanan obviously subscribes to the Shita of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that ketoros can be prepared in a non-klisharis. Fine. I'm Rabbi Yoshia. Tipater ba'umah mishal beis savtina. The Gemara says not necessarily. It could be that we're talking about not just anybody, but it happens to be somebody from the house of Avtinas who's preparing the klisharis. Shayan nota b'schara ketoros. So and his wages would be paid for with the ketoros. So in other words, it could very well be that in that particular mission, which we're going to be seeing tomorrow, is talking about a very limited situation. Now it happens to be that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, who we learned just moments earlier, says that the ketoros has to be prepared in a klisharis, so he's going to go like the Shita of Shmuel. The Amar of Huna B'Shem Shmuel, Machteshes, as far as the the mortar, the pestle, you know, the things that you grind, the kataras, asu asoba klisharas lekodesh. So the so that's made in that is made in a klisharis, meaning that you have to have it as a klisharis. Good. So the Gemara just simply aligns the sheet of Shmuel like to that of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Chanina, that the kataras has to be prepared in a klisharis. So basically what we've just done in the last 10 lines of the Gemara is the basic machlokas amongst the Amoraim as to whether or not a kataras has to be prepared in a klisharis or it does not have to be prepared in a klisharis. Finishing up today's daf, Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Bon, Amra Rabbi Chuna Kume Rabbi Yossi, Davar Shekarish B'Kli Sharis Nifta. So I don't understand. If the kataras is prepared in a klisharis, so how can we redeem it? Meaning that as part of using last year's kataras for this year, so we talked about the three steps, but the three steps basically are deconsecrate it and then reconsecrate it. But you can't deconsecrate it if it's prepared in a klisharis. So Amar Lai, Velo Shmuel, he's the Gemara says, wait 1 second. So the Gemara says, even if you subscribe to Shmuel, that the kataras is prepared in a klisharis, it can still go through the process of deconsecration, reconsecration. Why? Because, Kalhu Bemoser. Because it happens to be that Shmuel, Lishitaso, is of the opinion that with surplus of the Beis HaMikdash, even if it was in a klisharis, Shmuel's of the position that it can be deconsecrated. The East Palgon, the Gemara says that this is a machlokas. Hosir b'tmimim, Shmuel Amar, Niftim kismimim, and Rav Yochanan Amar, Niftim kipsul hamukdashim. A machlokas between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, if I have surplus, meaning I was makdish a lot of animals, or a lot of money for animals, and it turns out that there was surplus, and it turns out that the surplus, obviously, by definition, it wasn't needed. So, can I just simply redeem it, even though it had Kedusha Saguf? So Shmuel happens to be of the opinion that if it's surplus, even surplus of Kedusha Saguf, it's redeemable. Rav Yochanan does not agree with that. But this is Shmuel Lishitaso. So, the Gemara is just simply putting together a couple of Shitas of Shmuel. Shmuel, who has our Mishnah, that you can go through the process of deconsecration and reconsecrating the Ketores from last year to this year, and Shmuel, who's of the opinion that the Ketores has to be prepared in a Klisharis, so how do you go through Chilol and being Makdishit? So this is Shmuel Lishitaso, because Shmuel says that he's just simply more makel when it comes to surplus, even surplus of things that have Kedusha Sagov. Hosiru Si'irin. And the Gemara just ends off with one more note on this machlokas between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan. Let's say you have, additional seirim that were used, for a carbon chatas. What you set them aside for the year, and it turns out you just simply had extra at the end of the year, surplus. So, adati de Shmuel im ola niftes, lo kol shekin chatas. Well, if I can redeem surplus carbon olas, I can also redeem surplus carbon chatas as well. Al dati de Rav Yochanan, amar Rebbe Zira yiru, amar Rav Shmuel ber Rav Yitzchak, mekaitzim behemesim mizbeach. Now, as far as Rav Yochanan's position is concerned, so a sub machlokas amarayim, what exactly are you going to do with the surplus carbon chatas? Either let it graze develop a blemish, redeem it, and then the redemption money is going to go towards Ketzah Mizbech, or you can actually offer it as Ketzah Mizbech as well. V'kasha yeshchata shekreva ola. This idea that I could just be rerouted from a chatas to an ola, that's a little bit difficult to understand. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yossi Shnuyi. So the Gemara says, yeah, but over here it's different. Why? She'ein karbonat tzibor nikvan ela b'shchita. Because look, this is a carbon tzibor. Carbon tzibor, so they are fungible. So in other words, a carbon tzibor is not given a specific kedusha. The specificity of the kedusha of a carbon tzibor only comes about when you shecht it. So it has more of an amorphous type of kedusha. And so therefore, yeah, if there's surplus at the end of the year, so you can reroute it from a chatas to an ola. Amar Rabbi Chiya Tanai Bezinhu, the Gemara suggests, it seems to be pretty much a similar path. I'm sure there are subtle differences between what we just said and the way Rabbi Chiya is going to say it. Tanai Bezinhu, alamosa shikruvu olos, or it could just simply be a Tanai Bezinhu. That preconditioned into the sanctification of a carbon tzibor is that if we don't need it for a carbon tzibor, it could be rerouted to another type of carbon. You could say it like that as well. Again, it sounds awfully similar to the first way we're saying it. Ad kan, today's daf. Let's quickly summarize, review today's daf. Admittedly, more challenging daf, but let's just quickly summarize. Starting point of today's daf. What is essential in terms of the Beis HaMikdash in order to offer karbanos? Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir says you need all the kelim in place. The Chachamim say, no, you only need the Mizbeach. And the Amorayim, who argue as to whether or not you need a menorah or a shulchan, or a menorah and a shulchan, and other kelim, so they're only talking about the avodah shebifnim. But avodah shebichutz, they all agree to the Chachamim that you only need the Mizbeach to offer it. That was our first topic of the day. Second topic of the day. Ramps, according to Abishal, were privately funded. Ramps for the Parah Adum were privately funded. And so Rabbi Chanina says it speaks to the arrogance of these Kohen Gadols, each one of them refusing to use the previous Kohen Gadol's ramps. The Gemara, however, did not think that that is a good proof because Shimon HaTzadik in his lifetime built and rebuilt a ramp for the Parah Aduma, where Shimon HaTzadik in his lifetime had two Parah Adumas. Fine. A discussion to end the first half of today's daf, and that is Moser Peiros. This category of extra revenue that comes into the Beis HaMikdash, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's the profiting that we do by taking the surplus funds and basically making business out of it and enjoying the profits. Rabbi Kiva says you cannot do that. And the Gemara's discussion of what if you are insuring the principal? Can you do it then? The Gemara's answer is yes, and presumably even according to Rabbi Kiva. The Gemara, by the way, doesn't make that point super clear that Rabbi Akiva would agree to, but in the context of the Gemara, it certainly sounds like even Rabbi Akiva would agree to. Other revenue streams that came into the Beis HaMikdash, the price fluctuation, and the overages when you're actually measuring the flour, the wine, and the oil, so those are other revenue streams that the Gemara described over here to take us to the first half of today's daf. Second half of today's daf, all revolving around one topic, and admittedly a complicated topic. And that is taking last year's surplus of the Keturis, there are minimally 2.5 additional money from last year, and then repurposing them for this year, but being able to use them this year with this year's money. So basically, it's really simple to say it in short order. It gets complicated when you have to go through the process, but in short order, deconsecrating the Keturis, the extra Keturis from last year, and then reconsecrating them with the monies of this year. That's the second half of today's daf. That's the really short version of it. The longer version of it is obviously much more complicated. We'll stop over here.